Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is the pilot episode of A Mostly Accurate View. My name is Richard Wade. I'm your host. We've got a lot to talk about, a lot of things to talk about today. Little introduction of myself, a little background. We're going to talk about third-party candidates, the two-party duopoly. We're going to talk about Hillary Clinton, and of course, talk about Hillary. Got to talk about Bill. We're going to talk about Donald Trump. We're going to talk about the state of our political and economic systems. A lot to talk about. Again, my name is Richard Waite. Originally born in Virginia, lived there for 28 years, moved to Michigan not quite 10 years ago, transitionary period on my way out to the Pacific Northwest, friendlier area, I suppose, for left-leaning progressives such as myself. But I feel the need to do this podcast, which may end up at some point becoming a live broadcast. For now, it's going to be the podcast format. But I started a blog a long time ago, mostlyaccurateview.com. And initially, I had intended for it to be a sort of music blog. I love live music, concerts, music festivals, etc. And it was supposed to be like a kind of sociological view of the world, but through the eyes of a music lover. Recently, though, a little over a year ago, politics entered my life like a bullet train. I'd always cared, but never thought that I could really make a difference, never thought that my vote really counted that much. I've always voted third parties. But then with the candidacy for the Democratic nomination of Senator Bernie Sanders, I realized, seeing the power of the people that stood up when he stood up for the people, the power that our voices had, the changes that we brought about in various ways, made me realize that we really do have a voice. We really do have the ability to change things for the better, to make things better for all people. But the only way to do that is to stand up and speak about it. And sure, there's plenty of podcasts out there. There's plenty of broadcast, news broadcasts, independent media. But it's not very well known. For younger people, millennials, people slightly older than millennials like myself, who grew up with the advent and advancements of the internet and digital technology, we get that. We see a lot more sources of information than the people that have been getting their information from news sources, major news sources, on television, cable news networks for decades now. Those sources very much shape public opinion instead of informing people of the issues and allowing them to think about it and form their own opinions. So as a sort of blowback from that, people are getting tired of basically all the bullshit that they hear and see constantly, when the truth is out there if you just look for it. In today's modern age, this is the age of information, and with that, there's so much information just right there, readily available at your fingertips if you just look for it. And because of that, ignorance is now no longer a state of being that people simply exist in, not knowing any better. Ignorance is now a choice. And to be ignorant of the issues and the things that surround these issues, especially when you've got the ability and opportunity right in front of you, to inform yourself and make informed decisions, it most certainly is a choice to remain ignorant and blind. And so the more of us that raise our voices, the more of us that are there to inform people of what's going on around them that they're very blind to, obviously, the better off we're going to be. I don't expect to change the world, but I would like to affect it a little. And this is the way that I've found, I think, that I'm going to be able to do that, or at least have a clean conscience that I tried. You know, I started that blog, like I said, a long time ago. It was supposed to be a music blog. And when politics entered my life, it sort of shifted. And I found that if I wanted to maintain that blog as an outlet for my thoughts and views on politics and society and culture and whatnot, that I would have to basically be typing constantly. That's what I do for a living. I'm a writer. I'm a copywriter, and I do that enough, I think, to where I no longer really feel a desire to sit there typing out words for a blog. So I'm going to shift away from the written text to the verbal method of communication through this podcast. And again, potentially, it could end up being a live broadcast. But for now, that's where we're at. Obviously, like I said, I'm very left-leaning on most issues. A couple of issues I'm a little more centrist on, but for the most part, I'm very, very left. And you'll come to find that as you come to know me better. All that being said, that's the introduction of me for you, and nice to meet you, and welcome to my podcast. Thanks for listening. So, first thing I want to talk about today is third-party candidacies. The notion that a vote for a third party is a spoiler vote. Jammu Baraka is the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, running on the ticket with Dr. Jill Stein. A lot of Bernie Sanders supporters, like myself, when he endorsed and nominated Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nominee, turned away from the Democratic Party and looked for another candidate that aligned with our views. The Green Party platform most closely aligns with my political views and the things that I'd like to see happen, the changes I'd like to see made in our country and in the world. Now, there's some people out there who say that this is all Bernie Sanders' fault. Can't believe it. He turned people away from the Democratic Party. And while that might be true for some people, let me clue you in on a little something. No, Bernie Sanders didn't turn me away from the Democratic Party, and there's a lot of people who feel the exact same way that I do. Bernie Sanders actually brought me to the Democratic Party. Like I said before, I've always voted third-party candidates, always. And this primary cycle was the very first time and looks to be the very last time that I ever vote Democratic. I've never voted Republican. But as far as voting for one of the two major parties, this was the first time that I ever have. And looking at the way the Democratic Party handled things, marginalized, minimalized our voices, they don't deserve my vote. So that being said, because people want to blame Bernie Sanders for the Democratic Party losing votes, no, it is not Bernie Sanders' fault. It's Hillary Clinton's fault. See, the Democrats think that we owe them our vote because they're the alternative to the Republicans. And because they're the alternative to the Republicans, if we don't want a Republican in office, well, of course we have to vote Democrat. We have to vote for Hillary Clinton. What do you want? What do you want, Trump? Of course you got to vote for Hillary Clinton. You can't have Trump in office. But it's not our job as voters to vote for the person that is not another person simply on the virtue of not being that other person. It's the candidate's job to come and get our vote, to speak to us, to talk to us about the issues that we care about and make a difference that's going to benefit all of us so that we want to vote for them. We don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton. I don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton, and I think I speak for a lot of other people. I don't want to vote for her because she does not reflect my values. But look at the issues. Look at the issue. I mean, just look at Trump. He's a monster. So is Hillary Clinton. She is just as awful, if not worse, on a global scale, on a long-term scale, than Donald Trump could ever hope to be. I get more into that later. But that's why I'm not voting for Hillary Clinton. That's why a lot of us are not voting for Hillary Clinton. And for anybody to try and shame us, to use Trump to shame us into voting for someone that we don't want, it's disingenuous at best. And there's a lot of people doing this now. Even independent media sources are basically saying that if we don't vote for Hillary Clinton, we're complete fucking idiots. I'm not an idiot. I'm not stupid. And I do realize the risks. I realize that a Trump presidency would be disastrous. I also realize that a Hillary Clinton presidency would be disastrous. So just because you think that one might be slightly less awful, that's not my opinion. I think they're both very, very awful, just in different ways. So now we come to the Green Party. There's also the Libertarian Party. There's, you know, a few other fringe candidates, whatever you want to call them. But for the most part, the four major candidates, of course, the two front runners, Hillary Clinton for the Democrats, Donald Trump for the Republicans. Then you've got Gary Johnson for the Libertarians, and then you've got Jill Stein for the Green Party. And Jill Stein's running mate is Ajamu Baraka. Been a civil rights leader his entire life, has fought for equality for forever, as far as I know. I didn't know anything about him until Jill Stein picked him as her running mate. But since then, I've done, you know, some research. Now, some of his views are a little extreme for some people, for some tastes. His personal views on things are obviously, you know, debatable. But that's not here nor there at this point. We'll get into that, you know, at another time. But what I want to talk about right now is about an hour ago. It is currently 9:40 a.m. on Friday, September 16th, 2016. And about an hour ago, Ajamu Baraka made a post on Facebook. And he's talking about the propensity of Democrats and Democratic leaders, the Democratic Party, and individual people to basically shame us into voting for Hillary Clinton out of fear of a Donald Trump presidency. He says, "The most recent appeal from the Democratic Party warning voters that a vote for a third-party candidate is like a vote for Trump is evidence of a real shift in the awareness of the American people. First, let me clarify. A vote for Trump is a vote for Trump. A vote for Clinton is a vote for Clinton. Using fear to persuade voters to support political parties that have continually disappointed on major issues from foreign policy, education, healthcare, and the economy is the epitome of a failed democracy. Second, let's address the fact that the Democrats are admittedly launching a multi-million dollar digital campaign that talks about what's at stake and how a vote for a third party candidate is a vote for Donald Trump. Yet, they refuse to open the debates. It's interesting how quickly millions of dollars get thrown at attempts to control the minds and opinions of the people when over half of the workers in this country make less than $30,000 a year. He goes on to talk about the Green Party platform and other ways that money is wasted in our governments. History shows that neither the Democrats or Republicans are invested in real change, so they'll pay to convince you that they are, but they won't pay to fund our failing schools. Take this appeal as evidence that we are winning and that this shift in consciousness will continue to extend beyond the presidential election. That's a very important part. This shift in consciousness will continue to extend beyond the presidential election. Absolutely it will. 100% it will. People like myself, people like Tim Black, the Young Turks, even though I'm a little jaded with them right now, I understand that they just really, really feel that Donald Trump is more of a concern than Hillary Clinton is. And not even all of them feel that way. But there's more and more of us are going to stand up and voice our opinions and tell people how we feel and invite them to discuss and to think about things on their own and come to their own conclusions rather than just taking the word of the major political parties and their corporate media mouthpieces at what they're worth, blindly just trusting them, you know, the blind leading the blind or whatever you want to say. That's what's going to happen. Now, looking at the numbers, and the polls are very, very skewed in many, many ways, namely that a lot of them are not even polling the millennial generation, the 18 to 35-year-olds, the Green Party's largest voting base. And so they're making it look like the Green Party doesn't have much support at all. And that's just plainly not true. I can tell it. They're doing it that way so that they don't have to open up the debates, because the Committee on Presidential Elections has come up with some rule somehow that if they don't poll at 15%, they don't get a chance to stand on the stage and tell people about their views. Why is that threshold there? Why is there a 15% threshold in the polls for a candidate to get into the debates? If they've got something to say, the American people should be able to hear that. And if they're complete morons, if they're complete idiots, then we'll see that and it'll be obvious and we won't vote for them. So there's nothing to lose by letting them into the debates. There's literally nothing to lose by letting any third party candidate into the debates. The only thing that there is for them to lose is possible support. The only thing that there is for them to lose is the support of people who don't know that there's other candidates, that there's other platforms, that there's other parties, that there's other views. And this is yet another example of corporate mainstream media controlling the public opinion at the behest of their corporate donors and the major political parties. So the more we talk about it, the more we put it out there, the more people hear it, the more people will know. And then they'll share, and then they'll share. And yes, Mr. Baraka is completely, completely correct. This is going to continue. This shift in consciousness is going to continue far beyond the presidential election, far beyond the next one, and the next one after that. But going back to his initial point, a vote for Trump is a vote for Trump. A vote for Clinton is a vote for Clinton. Using fear to persuade voters to support political parties that have continually disappointed on major issues is the epitome of a failed democracy. This is 100% the problem. People, if I say that I'm not voting for either Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, immediately I'm derided, as if I'm a moron, as if I don't know how politics works. I absolutely know how politics works, and this is how it works. This is democracy. Telling me that I have to vote for one of these two people is most certainly not democratic at all. And here's the thing, is that if a vote for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson is a vote for Trump, then at the same time, a vote for Jill Stein or Gary Johnson is also a vote for Hillary Clinton. It just depends on the way you're looking at it. If I'm a Republican and I support Trump, then people who are voting for anybody other than Trump is voting for Hillary Clinton. If I'm a Democrat and I support Hillary Clinton, then anybody who votes for anybody other than Hillary Clinton is voting for Trump. But as a supporter of the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, and I'm assuming that many supporters of the Libertarian candidate, Gary Johnson, feel the same way, we look at it as, no, this is my vote, and I will use it, my voice, the only tool I have in our government that is supposedly of the people, by the people, and for the people. The only tool that I have is my vote. That's my voice. And I will use my voice to speak my mind. I'm not going to use my voice to speak your mind because you think that I should. If Donald Trump is that awful, why on earth would you run a candidate, the most dishonest and unliked candidate in Democratic history, against a monster like Donald Trump? It doesn't make any sense to me. Is it because you thought that, oh, well, they'll all see how awful Donald Trump is and they'll fall in line. They'll save us. We're going to put the status quo queen up on the nomination. Yeah. And then everybody else is going to see how awful Donald Trump is, and then they're going to come save us. So, and then when we don't do that, why are you not supporting our candidate? Are you kidding? But Trump! And that's the ridiculousness of it. If Hillary Clinton was in any way a decent candidate, she'd be demolishing Trump, and it would be right back to what it was before. We don't need your votes. Whatever. You're inconsequential. Your voice doesn't matter. There's enough of us. We're the grown up. The grown ups are going to handle it. There's enough of us. You kids just run along and play and throw your tantrum because your Bernie Sanders didn't get the nomination. We got this. Don't worry about that. That's what I heard all through the primaries as I was speaking out against the ridiculousness that I saw. You're just throwing a tantrum. This is the way it is. The grown-ups got this. Run along and play. Now here it is that it's a very, very big possibility that Donald Trump could win this election. They're virtually tied in every poll. They're virtually tied in unfavorables. They're virtually neck and neck. He's winning in major, important swing states like Ohio and Florida right now. And now it's, we need your vote. You got to vote for Hillary Clinton. You didn't care about my vote. You didn't care about my voice in the primaries. You, in fact, told me to take my ball and go home, child. Yet, now I'm being derided by taking my ball out of your court and going to a more friendly court that actually cares about my voice and what I have to say. And now it's my fault. Mm-mm. That's not how that works. That's not how that works at all. A vote for Hillary Clinton is a vote for Hillary Clinton, and a vote for Donald Trump is a vote for Donald Trump. A vote for Jill Stein is a vote for Jill Stein. A vote for Gary Johnson is a vote for Gary Johnson. And don't you dare come and tell me that I'm not allowed to vote my conscience. And if I do, that it's my fault that Donald Trump got elected. It's not my fault. I didn't elect Hillary Clinton. You did. So let's talk about Hillary Clinton a little bit. Hillary Clinton is, again, the most disliked and most dishonest Democratic candidate for the presidency in history. Ever. Ever. There's never been someone as disliked and untrusted as she is. Great idea, Democrats, to put her up as the presidential nominee. Fantastic. Way to go. Now, maybe you were thinking that another establishment candidate would be the Republicans' candidate. Probably Jeb Bush. He was the favorite initially. And then there was Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, and John Kasich. But initially, Jeb Bush was supposed to be the shoo-in for the Republican nomination. He had the family name, the family recognition. His dad was president for 4 years. His brother was president for 8. Political dynasty. He's been the governor of Florida for 150 years, however long. But as you saw in the primary, anybody who was paying attention to the primaries, he just didn't have any energy. He didn't have any momentum. He never did. He had all the money, just none of the charisma. And his candidacy was an utter failure. It was kind of sad to watch, actually, as I chuckle about it. Frankly, in some ways, I'd rather him be the Republican nominee now, because then Hillary would be a shoo-in, and I wouldn't have to hear this bullshit anymore about how not voting for Hillary Clinton will make someone else a monster be the president, as if that's my fault. But he's not. Donald Trump is. And perhaps the Democrats were thinking that by coronating their queen, Hillary Clinton, as the Democratic nominee for the president, it would be a landslide. There'd be no possible way she could lose against Jeb Bush or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio. But that's not what happened. Trump started with a populist voice. Now, granted, it's a majorly right-wing populist voice, but that's what he did. That's how he won the nomination, by talking to the people. He was speaking to the people and saying the things that his supporters wanted to hear. They want someone to talk about the things that affect them. And up until now, every politician has basically just more establishment politics. We're going to do this, we're going to do that, but in the end, they're not really talking to the American people. They're talking to, you know, the top 20 or 30% income brackets, and everybody else, meh. Well, you know, we'll toss you a bone here or there. Here, we're gonna argue about abortion a little bit over here, and then over there we're gonna argue about gay marriage and LGBTQ rights. You know, and the end all be all of it is that it's very much like a wrestling match that you see on TV. It's scripted for the most part. There's fighting, there's factions, People are arguing this, that, and the other, but it's all for show. It's all for the dramatic effect of making people think that politicians are really on their side and having people side with those politicians. But the Republicans and the Democrats, just like those wrestlers all work for WWE, the Republicans and Democrats all work for the same corporations. These major multinational corporations throw millions of dollars at both sides. They donate to the Republican campaigns just as much as they donate to the Democratic campaigns. And they do that so that no matter who wins, they still have influence. They have bought access. So when the Republican candidate for whatever office wins, the corporation can then come to them and say, hey, you remember that $500,000 that I donated to your campaign? Yeah. Well, we need you to write a bill that says that we get to do whatever the fuck we want. And they do the same thing when the Democratic candidate for whatever office wins. Most of Congress, especially the Senate, and without a doubt, the president, have all been bought and paid for by these corporations. They know how to play the game, and how to play the game is to have both sides weighted towards your advantage. Very much like a casino. The little guy goes in there with a couple hundred bucks, and maybe he walks out with more. But chances are he's going to lose most of that. But the house always wins. Even when they lose, they win. Well, corporate America is the house. The Republicans and Democrats are the dealers, and the American people are the marks. We're the ones that go in there and just give them our money. We allow them to do this to us by perpetuating the two-party duopoly. This goes back to that original point of by Ajamu Baraka that a third-party vote is not a spoiler vote. It's a statement that we're tired of the status quo and the two-party system is the cause of the mess that we're in now, and the only way to fix that broken system is to break it completely and start over. Break the two-party duopoly. Allow third-party candidates into the debates. Make it legitimate. Make it an actual democracy. Give people choices. Either, you know, getting your foot cut off or your hand cut off is the choice that we have now, and neither one of those is appealing. So there are other choices out there. I beg of you, anybody listening to this, please make your own choice, think for yourself, and act accordingly. That all being said, back to Hillary Clinton. So she's been mired in controversy and scandal for a long, long time. And because the Republicans have thrown every single thing they can at her, whether it's founded or not, for so long that most of the things that actually are problematic are being written off. WikiLeaks has released pages upon pages upon pages, tens of thousands of pages of documents showing the corruption and the collusion of the Democratic National Committee and of Hillary Clinton and her cohorts. The Clinton Foundation is a pay-to-play organization. Donors to the Clinton Foundation get access to the State Department, and they control policy. It's been going on for years. Back even when Bill Clinton was in office, this was going on. The NATO offensive in Kosovo back in the late 90s, that was spearheaded by Bill Clinton, First of all, it was an offensive. And NATO is a strictly defensive treaty. The only time NATO forces are supposed to get involved is when one of NATO's allies have been attacked. That did not happen, yet NATO forces were still sent into Kosovo. There was some mines, I can't remember the name of the mines, but there were some mines, some very, very resource-rich mines that were seized and then sold for pennies on the dollar to a gentleman named George Soros. Since then, George Soros has been a major donor to the Clinton Foundation and to Hillary Clinton's campaign, as well as the super PACs that also fund her campaign. He's given millions to the Clintons. And do you think he did that for no reason, just because he's a nice guy? No. Those mines were worth about $5 billion. He paid pennies on the dollar for those mines and made a killing. So perhaps some of these donations to the Clinton Foundation campaigns or whatnot are just kind of like, hey, thanks for letting me come in and really, really rape this land and these people. It really worked out for me. Thanks, guys. Here, have a little bit of dough. Well, there's another email of Hillary Clinton's that was released from Hillary Clinton's server that is from George Soros that spoke about some problems going on in the area where he had the vested interest of maintaining at least a semblance of peace, because that's where his minds were, that's where his money was. And so he sent her an email telling her what's going on and what he thinks she should do about it. You can look this up. This actually happened. And I'll put links to the email and whatnot in the description of the video. Well, lo and behold, he had mentioned three names as possible ambassadors or liaisons, what have you, and mentioned what he thought they should do, what they should say, what they should do, the position they took, etc., etc. Lo and behold, 2 days after that email, one of those three names was named as ambassador, the UN ambassador to whatever, and took the exact position and the exact stance that George Soros had suggested. So as a donor of millions of dollars to Hillary Clinton and the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton campaign, George Soros actually was able to dictate policy to then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And that dictation of policy was followed through. But no. The money didn't affect her. He's a nice guy and gave her some money. And also, he had some good ideas. We had the same ideas. We didn't do what he said. We were going to do that anyway. And he just named the perfect person. And we were going to pick him anyway. That's what happened. It's got nothing to do with the influence of money at all. None. Right. Gotcha. So she's corrupt. She will sell state favors for the biggest donor. The highest bidder gets access. Another set of emails came out showing that as State Department, as head of the State Department, Clinton Foundation donors were given preference in meeting with her and gaining access to her for various reasons. Most recently, the emails have come out that showed that high dollar donors to the Democratic National Committee were given high ranking ambassadorship positions all over the world. All over the world, these millionaires who got access to our political system strictly because they have money were given ambassadorships. These are prestigious positions of authority, and they bought them. And that just goes to show that in our political system, in our corrupt political system that is run by people like Hillary Clinton and like Barack Obama, who has been a horrible disappointment to progressives on the left. Because our government is run by people like this, it is 100% pay to play. Our entire government, our entire political system is completely corrupted from the top all the way down to the bottom. The person with the most money has the most say. It's supposed to be one person, one vote. But instead, it's a million people, no votes, one person, lots of money, all the voice. That's how it works. That's not how it should work. That's awful. It's terrible. It's not in the best interest of the general public. But that's how it works. And we have to change that. We have to change that now. It's not something, oh, you know, incremental change. We can do this over the next, you know, 3-4 presidential elections. No, man, this has to happen now. The corporate interests have damaged our planet to the point where, yes, things like abortion, things like gun control, things like immigration, things like LGBTQ rights, these are very, very important issues. But they pale in comparison to what's going on with our planet. Our planet is dying. It is being murdered by corporates, unregulated corporations that could not give a shit less about anything other than their bottom line, their dollar, their profit. That's what they care about. They don't care about me, you, our planet, or anybody. They care about themselves and their money. And climate change is a very real thing. Anybody who denies climate change doesn't pay attention to the science. It's there. It's here. It's happening right now. It's not something that's going to happen down the road. It's happening right now. We're feeling the effects now of carbon dioxide that was pumped into the atmosphere 40 years ago. We've been pumping more and more and more over the past 40 years. So what do you think it's going to be like 40 years from now? We're probably already past the point of no return. But we have to do something. We have to try and change this. Otherwise, I mean, we might already be screwed, but what if we're not? But if we're not, then if we don't change it now, we're going to be. So we have to do something to change this. And it starts with reining in these corporations, regulating them, making them follow certain rules and certain laws that are going to protect the people, the planet, and without that, we're doomed. And it'll be because the dollar was just too important to some people, and the people who make a lot of those dollars know how important that dollar is to some people and gave it to those people so that they could continue to make more and more of those dollars. So Hillary Clinton is the actual tangible embodiment of this corruption that is virtually ruining our entire planet and any hopes of survival. Abortion might be a big issue for some people, and you know, the Republicans on one side and the Democrats on the other, or what have you. But if we don't address this climate change, this problem with our planet, abortion's not going to be an issue anymore. The planet is going to perform all of the abortions. Everybody is going to die. It's not, there's the, oh, well, we can move the, no. People are going to die on a massive, massive extinction level scale. If the human race makes it in any capacity, I'll be completely surprised. Well, actually, I won't, because I'll probably be dead. But objectively speaking, the proverbial, I'll be surprised. I'll be surprised if the human race makes it out of this alive. I don't think we will. Not with the way things are going now. If we don't change it, we're definitely not going to. And even if we do change it, we still might not, but, you know, well, then why? Just why even worry about it? Forget it. You know, it's too late now. No, that's, I can't do that. I'm going to take a quick break and, we'll be back in a couple minutes. We're going to talk about Donald Trump and we're going to talk about, why I'm not as afraid of a Trump presidency as some people think I should be. Yeah. Be right back.
subatomic particles know how to have a good time. Subatomic particles know how to have a good time. 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 Have a good time.
All right. Welcome back to the second half of the pilot episode of A Mostly Accurate View. For those of you just joining us, my name is Richard Wade. I'm your host, and this is the first episode. Let's talk about Donald Trump a little bit. Donald Trump is the Republican nominee for President of the United States of America. Most people, unless you've been living under a rock the past 30, 40 years, know who Donald Trump is. He's claims to be a billionaire. That's debatable. Made his money with real estate, beginning in New York and then expanding to worldwide. He's a character, to say the least. He's a complete fucking moron. He's a complete idiot. He's out of touch. He has no idea what's going on with the American people. He doesn't live that reality. Some would say he doesn't live in reality at all, and to a certain extent, I'm inclined to agree. He gets his information from cable news sources, like most of America does. But again, he doesn't live in the same reality as the rest of us. That all being said, he will be a disastrous president if he wins the election. The few ideas that we know of his on foreign and domestic policy are atrocious. They're absolutely atrocious. He does say a couple of things that I agree with, such as opposing disastrous trade deals like the TPP. But he says he wants to round up millions of people living in the United States and deport them all. A logistical nightmare that it would take years and years to do, billions of dollars. He wants to build a giant wall that is, for all intents and purposes, impossible to build. And he wants to ban a certain ideological group from coming into our country out of fear of domestic terrorism, terrorist attacks within our borders. Now, for a lot of people, that fear is very real, but look at the numbers, look at the statistics. You have far more chance of being shot and killed by a radical Christian fundamentalist in this country than you do of dying in a terror attack anywhere in the world. That's the truth. They use terrorism to terrorize us. And I don't mean the terrorists use terrorism to terrorize us. The media, the government uses these acts of terrorism to further terrorize us, to scare us into complacency so that they can strip away our rights as American citizens. And he does the same thing. He's a fearmonger, and he plays on people's fears and people's concerns, and he's divisive, and he's a bigot, and he's a racist. He's all of these things and more. Absolutely, I agree 100%. He's a maniac. And a Trump presidency would 100% be disastrous. So would a Clinton presidency. And while his presidency would be disastrous on a national scale, Clinton presidency would be disastrous on a global scale. But when you look at it in a more long-term sort of viewpoint, we can find reasons that a Clinton presidency would actually be more dangerous than a Trump presidency on a national scale. Follow me here. The thing about it is that I believe, and I'll explain why, I believe that a Trump presidency is less dangerous on a long-term national scale than a Hillary Clinton presidency. So, a lot of people think that the office of president is the most major political office that you can hold. And in a lot of ways, that is very true. However, it's still a political office. It's not a dictatorship. These things that Trump says he wants to do will be virtually impossible for him to get done. The entire Democratic Party hates him and will fight him on everything, every single thing that he tries to do, just so long as it doesn't make them look bad to their own constituency. Likewise, at least half of the Republican Party hates him as well, and they're also going to fight him on everything he tries to do, so long as it doesn't make them look bad to their constituency. Half the Republican Party is supporting him strictly on the virtue of him being Hillary Clinton's opponent. And if he gets into office, once he does, they're going to turn on him. They're concerned more right now with a victory over Hillary Clinton than they are with Donald Trump. They'll deal with Donald Trump when he wins, if he wins, which is a very real possibility. And then once he wins and he's in office, then they're going to turn on him. Then they're going to fight him. Then they're going to deal with him. The second he does anything, even remotely unconstitutional, guaranteed impeachment, bipartisan impeachment. So, if he does win the election and wants to remain in office, he is going to have to be really careful about the things he says and does if he wants to retain that office. And he's going to have advisors. He's going to have people that are going to tell him what to do. He's going to be nothing more than a puppet, and the most obvious puppet at that. So, Hillary Clinton, on the other hand, has bipartisan support. Her policies are so in line with Republican policies, for the most part, that she'll have support from both sides of the aisle. She'll have the support of the Democrats just on virtue of being a Democrat, and she'll have support of the Republicans because the things she talks about and things she wants to get done, they're in favor of. So, Donald Trump won't be able to do anything that he says he wants to do, but Hillary Clinton will be able to do almost everything that she says she wants to do. And to go even further, she's saying all these things now in order to get votes that she will completely turn her back on as soon as she's in office. She's against the TPP now all of a sudden, and that's not to garner votes. There were 45 different occasions where she spoke out in support of the TPP. 45. But now all of a sudden, because she realized it was costing her votes, now she's against it. I highly doubt it. So let's look at what's going on with the rest of the country in this election year. All of Congress, every seat in the House of Representatives is up for re-election, and half of the seats in the Senate are also up for re-election. So right now, there's a huge movement. A lot of people are worrying about down ballot candidates. And that's right. We should be, because that's where the real power lies. A president can, you know, have executive orders and this, that, and the other, but very few things, actually get passed through that. And even then, they still have to be funded. So the, even with an executive order, there's ways that Congress can basically veto an executive order, as it should be. That's part of checks and balances. That's the way that works. It's the way that's supposed to work. So down ballot candidates, I have a feeling that in this election cycle, liberals, Democrats are going to retake control of Congress, regardless of who actually wins the presidential election. This is going to happen if Trump's elected president or if Clinton is elected president. The Democrats are going to retake control of the House and the Senate. Now, if Hillary Clinton wins, there is going to be outrage because of how the primaries went and because of all the shady shit that she has done that has come to light. If she still wins, it's going to be there's going to be blood in the streets. There's going to be riots. There's going to be so much anger and so much outrage at the way our political system has been corrupted that it's going to be ridiculous. But let's say she does win and things calm down a little bit. Well, in 2018, for the midterm elections, people are going to be so pissed off still that this woman was basically installed in office. She wasn't elected. She was installed in office. And the same thing that happened in Barack Obama's first term, Democrats are just not going to vote. They're not going to vote in the midterms. Millennials aren't going to vote in the midterms. Independents aren't going to vote in the midterms. But you know who is going to vote in the midterms? Republicans. Because they're mad that Hillary Clinton, a Democrat, is president. Because they're mad that the Democrats control Congress. And so in the midterms, guess who's going to control Congress again? The Republicans. In 2020, Hillary Clinton is going to find it very, very difficult to get reelected. She's, because of the way this election has gone, and because of all the shady shit that she's done that has come to light, it's going to get worse. It's going to get more and more and more. And people are going to be pointing at her for the next 4 years, pointing out every single mistake that she makes, every single thing that comes out retroactively. And in 2020, re-election is going to be virtually impossible for her. And that's even if the Democrats don't primary her, which they very well may. You don't primary a sitting president. The sitting president's own party isn't going to primary them. I'd be surprised, honestly, if they don't. But even if they don't, she's still going to find re-election to be very difficult. Look at the support that a monster like Donald Trump has. And he lost half of the Republican voter base. There are people that are refusing to vote for him, that are voting for Gary Johnson or just not voting at all, that would vote if it was Ted Cruz or Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio. So the Republican support is there. And 2020, Hillary Clinton will not be reelected. So in 2018, the Republicans retake control of Congress. In 2020, a Republican beats Hillary Clinton out for her reelection, and now we have a Republican president and a Republican-controlled Congress. And the congressional elections in 2020 will go very much the same way. The Republicans will win Congress. They'll win the House, they'll win the Senate, and they'll win the White House in 2020. That's if Hillary Clinton is elected this year. If Donald Trump is elected this year, the exact opposite is going to happen. He's a moron. He's incompetent. He'll be a disastrous president, and everybody's going to see that. He's not going to be reelected in 2020. Absolutely not. And if the Democrats regain control of Congress in this election, then in 2018, faced with a Donald Trump president, they'll retain control because people are going to say, well, we've got to make sure that this guy can't do anything. Let's keep him a lame duck. Put Democrats in Congress, and then in two more years, we can vote him out. So the Democrats retain control of Congress through 2020, and a Democrat, a liberal, a progressive wins the White House in 2020. Then we have a liberal or progressive president, a liberal or progressive Congress, and that's the long-term effects of a Donald Trump presidency. And in that instance, a Donald Trump presidency is much more preferable than a Hillary Clinton presidency at this point. I know, but the Supreme Court, though, Donald Trump, the people that he put into the Supreme Court, I mean, they have a lot more effect than, you know, the Congress, because they interpret the laws. Yeah. Let's go back to how the entire Democratic Party and half of the Republican Party would fight Donald Trump on anything that he tried to do. That includes Supreme Court nominees. See, the president doesn't just say, hey, I got this guy over here and I'm putting him on the Supreme Court. Go fuck yourself. That's not how that works. He nominates them and they have to be approved. They have to go through an approval process. And they're not going to approve any Donald Trump nominee that isn't extremely center. If he chooses a far right wing conservative judge, the entire Democratic Party is going to fight that. And a lot of the Republicans are too. Because a lot of the Republicans are more centrist. If he chooses a far left leaning progressive, the Democrats are going to fight him on that because most of them are centrist. And the entire Republican Party is going to fight him on that. So he's got to choose a centrist for Supreme Court nominee. If Ruth Ginsburg dies or retires or whatever, and there's another opening, same thing. He's going to choose centrist, moderate Republican, or I'm sorry, Supreme Court nominees. He's not choosing anybody he's not choosing Scalia on steroids. If he does, that'll never be approved, ever. On the flip side, Hillary Clinton will pick more conservative judges, and they'll be approved. The Democrats will approve it on the virtue of that judge being picked by a Democrat, and the Republicans will approve it because that judge falls in line with their views. So we'll end up with a more conservative Supreme Court under Hillary Clinton than we would with Donald Trump. At the very least, they'll be similar. So the Supreme Court argument, you can just throw that right out the window. Tired of hearing it. It's old. Move ahead to 2020. Like I said, if Hillary Clinton is elected this year, then in 2020, the Republicans take control of all of Congress and the White House. 2020 is a census year. This is something that I don't hear anybody talking about. I've talked about it a couple of times. I wrote about it on my blog. You can go check it out. It's all right there. 2020 is a census year. If Hillary Clinton wins this year and the Republicans take control in the midterms and then take control of the White House in 2020 during a census year, after all that census information is compiled, they take the data in 2021 and redistrict. They redistrict the entire nation. And if the Republicans control Congress and the White House in a redistricting year, we are truly fucked. The next decade, regardless of who's in office, is one of a conservative stranglehold on the nation. On the flip side of that, if Trump is elected this year, and the opposite happens, where 2020 comes and Democrats have retaken Congress and they win the White House back, liberals, progressives, Democrats, whatever, then in 2021, after the census data has been compiled, then liberals, progressives, now control the redistricting. That's what we really need. That's the long-term goal. That's the big picture. That's winning the game. We can let Donald Trump win this quarter, because the end of the game, we'll win. See, oh, but you don't have any idea how badly he's going to hurt people that don't have your white privilege. Look, I understand that white privilege exists. I understand that I benefit from it. I didn't ask for it. I didn't ask to be born this color. I just am. Okay? So stop holding something that I have no control over my head. Right? I don't agree with white privilege. I don't think it should exist. It's part of the systemic racism in our nation and in the world. But to blame me for it existing is not my fault. I don't try to further it, and I don't use it to my benefit. And people think that the things that I'm saying are me sitting on my pedestal of white privilege. No, they're not. The things that I'm saying are looking at the future. And in 10 years, my kid's going to be an adult, and he's going to have to deal with these choices that we're making today. I'm not thinking about myself. I'm thinking about future generations down the road that are going to have to deal with the shit that we are doing right now. Just like we're dealing with the shit that the greatest generation and the baby boomers did, how awesome they were, left us with the worst global economy, raped the planet, and here you go. You guys handle that. We don't really want your votes. We just want to stick you with the bill of all the shit that we've been doing for the past 40 years. Cool? Yeah? All right, cool. Thanks. And see, if Donald Trump wins the presidency this year and we can redistrict because of a Democratic liberal progressive takeover in 2020, we can redistrict in 2021, we can actually maintain some semblance of sanity in the nation for at least a decade. And then the fight will start all over again. We'll have to do it all over again. It's not this election is not the end-all be-all, people. It's not going to solve all our problems. Hillary Clinton in office, Donald Trump in office, Bernie Sanders in office. It's not going to solve all our problems. This is not the end of the battle. This is something that's going to continue forever. For all of our lives, there's always going to be this group over here fighting with this group over here, fighting with this group over here. And rather than fighting, if we could all come together for some common sense consensus, that would be fantastic. If we could, you know, get some compromise, some actual working compromise. But it's my way or the highway is what everybody's saying. And that's not good for anybody. Nothing good will ever come of that. So the important part is to win the White House and Congress in 2020 so that 2021 redistricting can benefit the American people versus right-wing conservative uber corporatist interests, which is what will happen if Hillary Clinton is elected president this year. That's why I don't fear a Donald Trump presidency as much as some people think I should. It's why I don't fear a Donald Trump presidency as much as a Hillary Clinton presidency. Again, the things that he talks about are virtually impossible. He won't be able to get any of it done. Any of it. He's not going to deport 10 million people. It's not possible. He's not going to build a giant wall on the border to Mexico. It's not possible. He's not going to ban Muslims from coming into the country. It's not possible. Look, let's say he does get support for that. All right. So now there's a moratorium on Muslims entering the country. Okay. I'm not a Muslim. I converted to Christianity. The Lord Jesus Christ is my savior. Can I come in? Well, sure, sure. And then did they really convert though? How do you know? How do you prove they didn't? So now it's, well, you were Muslim or you come from a Muslim country. And so we just can't let you in. Now it's not about Muslim ideology. Now it's racist. And that just won't fly. It's not going to happen. None of these things is going to happen. So when the Democrats or anybody tries to scare you into voting for Hillary Clinton because of Donald Trump, just remember that his incompetence is our victory. He doesn't have control. He doesn't have the authority. As president, he would not have the authority to do any of these things. Now, he may have the support of some of the more extreme members of our government, but for the most part, by and large, our elected representatives are very much centrist. They're moderates, and they're not going to fall in line with these extreme ideas that he has. When he gets into office, they will fight him on every single thing. So none of these things he's talking about is possible. The Republicans want him to win only because they don't want Hillary Clinton to win. I understand that viewpoint. I don't want Donald Trump to win either. I don't want either one of them to win. I want a progressive in office. I want someone who's really going to fight for the people of this nation, for me, for you, for our kids, for the health of this planet. That's who I'm voting for, because that's who I want in office. But I'm not going to vote for Hillary Clinton because I'm scared of Donald Trump. Because I'm not. And you shouldn't be either. It's ridiculous that people are using this sort of fear tactic to try and control us like they have been forever. The difference now, though, is that, like I said before, information's available right at your fingertips. There's a thing called the internet. You can find out whatever you want to, whenever you want. Now, there's a lot of bullshit on the internet, too. It's on you, though, to look for both sides of an issue, educate yourself, and then draw your own conclusions. Don't just read one article and say, oh, well, you know, that makes sense. I guess that's how I feel about it, because there are different viewpoints. And it's not always this side or that side. Sometimes there's 3, 4, 5 different ways of looking at something. So it's on you to educate yourself and inform yourself about the issues and draw your own conclusions. Don't take what you hear, not even from me, not from the Young Turks, not from Tim Black, not from anybody. Don't take what you hear at face value. Dig into it. If it turns out that you agree with what you were originally heard from whatever news source, good, fantastic. At least you went through the effort to figure it out. But if you're just going to take someone's word, if all you're going to do is listen to Fox News or CNN and whatever they say is hand to God the truth, that's the way it is, that's what it's got to be, then you're part of the problem. And you're the reason why this two-party system has the control that it does and will retain that control for as long as they possibly can. And they will. So it's on us to fix this broken system. And the way to do that is to stop letting this broken system control us. That's what I'm doing. And I think that in the end, in November, the results of this election are going to surprise a lot of people. No, I don't believe that numbers-wise, polling-wise right now, Gary Johnson or Jill Stein actually can win the White House, but, and this is far more important to me, it's possible. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to dissuade anybody. It's very, very possible that a third-party candidate can win the White House. It's possible. Absolutely. Absolutely it is. I'm voting for one. But the reality of the numbers say right now that that's not really going to be possible. Okay. But what is possible is for one or both of the Green Party or Libertarian Party to reach 5% of the national vote. And if that happens, they're no longer outliers. They're no longer fringe parties. They get federal funding. They get automatically included in any future debates. They actually have a chance at that point. So if we want to have a chance to tell the Democrats and Republicans to go fuck themselves in 2020, this is what we have to do now. We have to get as many votes as possible for a third party or both the third and fourth party, whatever, however you want to call it, as many votes as possible for those parties so that in 2020 we actually do have legitimate, valid choices that aren't Democrat or Republican corporatists. So, no, numbers-wise, I don't think that Jill Stein or Gary Johnson really has a realistic chance at winning the White House. It's possible, but statistically speaking, not probable. But it's still extremely, extremely important that they get as much support as they possibly can. If a Trump presidency truly, truly scares you that much that you absolutely have to vote for Hillary Clinton, that's fine. That's your choice. It's your right. It's your vote. Use it how you see fit. If you support Hillary Clinton and actually think that the things she's saying and the things she's going to do are going to help you, then by all means, vote for her. If you like the things that Trump says, I feel bad for you, but by all means, vote for him. But if you're voting for a person that does not represent your values, then you're letting the two-party corporatist-controlled system win. And trust me, they are not in it for your benefit. They are 100% in it for their own. I'm gonna call it a day here. Thank you for joining me for my pilot episode of A Mostly Accurate View. You can check out some of my writings at mostlyaccurateview.com. It has not been updated in a while. I'm sure here or there I'll get a wild hair and decide to pen something. But for the meantime, this is going to be my chosen method of expression. So I hope that you found some of the things I had to say interesting, and I hope that I sparked some discussions. Feel free to leave comments in the YouTube video. You can email me at amostlyaccurateview@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at @mostly_accurate. And you can check out my Facebook page, Mostly Accurate View. Leave me comments. Tell me what you think. Tell me some of the things that concern you, some of the issues that you want to hear me talk about or that you want talked about. Hopefully, if this picks up a little bit, I might have some guests in the future or perhaps a co-host, maybe. We'll see. Anyway, it's Friday. Enjoy your weekend. People that don't work weekends, people that do work weekends, I understand your pain. I do. Thank you so much for joining, and have a great day.
Stand next to me in this lonely crowd. Who's the man who swears he's not to blame? Shine so loud, crying out that he was free. Huh. I see my light come shine.